Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Hello, yes, welcome to another week of Lost in Science. We have you for 30 minutes now. We're so happy that you're with us. You're holding our hand. We're taking those steps together to explore what glorious things science has to share with us this week. My name's Lyndon and I'm joined in the studio by Chris. Hey Chris, how are you going?
I am fantastic, thank you, Lyndon. Very excited to be here and to be talking about some curious science, shall we say?
Some curious science? What have you got that's so curious?
Well, I've got something that I don't know if you knew that this was a thing. It's scientists attempting to solve, scientists of various disciplines attempting to solve a puzzle about the spiky things in biology. So things like teeth of animals and primarily got some couple of papers looking at stingers, various kinds of stingers of animals and plants and other species, and how they, you know, think of these as the sharp, pointy things of nature. Mm-hmm. Turns out that they're not perfectly sharp, as you could imagine. They've kind of got a rounded tip, all these things, like from teeth to bee stingers and this kind of stuff. And there's been several people trying to figure out what is this shape. Is it this shared shape across different species? What is the reason for this shape? And as I said, lots of different disciplines trying to get to the bottom of it. And so, yeah.
Big teams solving problems about little things. When you said spiky stuff about biology, I immediately jumped to the COVID virus image of all the little spiky bits sticking out, but we're not talking that small.
No, no. And well, we're nearly that small, but that's a different kind of spike. Those are the spike proteins, and they look, you know, under a microscope, they look, coronaviruses look kind of spiky, but not, they're not proper spikes. They're not pointy spikes. I'm talking about actual pointy spikes. And as I said, it's a problem that's apparently been puzzling various scientists. As usual, the physicists come in and ruin it for everybody. But look,
we don't know anything. We don't understand. We need to go back to the beginning of the Big Bang.
You love a story where the physicists come in and do some strange things. So I will go into that and tell you what you may need to know about all this stuff and what it has to do with pencils as well, in particular.
I'm sure it's got lots to do with pencils. They're a spiky thing. Great.
Yes. Now, Lyndon, do you have any thoughts on creatures biting us with their spiky protuberances?
With their spiky protuberances. Yeah, I've got a few thoughts. Most of those thoughts are negatives, but I do hold a special place in my scientific heart for a couple of critters that bite us, and that's sort of what I wanted to talk about today. An often overlooked support member of team science, right? This critter that I'm talking about, they're a carer, they're a muse, they're a fortune teller, they're doctors. Of course, Chris, you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about leeches. I'm talking about the leech.
That's not where my mind was going at all.
Oh my God. Do I want to know where your mind was going?
I was a bit confused, but I didn't know it'd be something. It sounded something kind of nice and warm and fuzzy what you were saying. And leeches or anything, but are they?
No, that is true. They're not that lovely. Have you been bitten by a leech before?
I have. Yes, not for a long time, thankfully. Touch wood.
I feel like most people have. If it didn't happen to them, it happened to someone else. Some bushwalking, dam crossing situation where there's blood where there shouldn't be blood. And there's something squishy where there shouldn't be something squishy. But from a science point of view, we actually normally think of leeches in a medical context, right? We think about leeches as being used to be part of the medical treatment of various ailments. But Did you know that leeches, we're talking about spiky things, leeches get their long spiky bodies stuck into a couple of other different science fields as well. And so today I wanted to just give a bit of a listicle, a leechicle of three different areas in which leeches have been used for scientific research, different scientific fields, I suppose. So I want to look at the medical side of things, both the historical and the more recent, because leeches are still used today, as well as a couple of other disciplines. So that's my teaser. If you're squeamish, it's okay. There's not going to be that much blood.
Well, I look forward to a story that, look, let's say it'll suck, but not in the bad way necessarily. Let's say that. On with the show. Okay, yes, you're listening to Lost in Science, and I am talking, as I said, about things like teeth and stingers and those sort of things, and how there is kind of a uniform kind of shape across nature that is observed. Now,
it's pointy. Pointy.
They are pointy.
Is that the shape?
Things. Yeah, they're pointy. But the question is, are they different kinds of pointy? Because when mathematically, this is one thing, we're getting into the maths of it, really. Oh, I should have said it's going to be mathematics involved. But I thought I'd know no actual professional.
Don't turn off. It's going to be interesting. No, I'm joking. Maths is always interesting.
Yeah, you look convinced. Okay, we are talking about the pointy things. And you're right, they are pointy. And for a long time now, it seems, scientists have been trying to figure out why things are the shape they are. And yes, they're pointy because they penetrate things, I guess. You know, they spike into them and this sort of stuff. So, but look, there has been a bit of work done. There's quite a bit of work on teeth, as you can probably imagine. There was an interesting paper that was published in 2021 by some Melbourne researchers, primarily biologists, who examined this question. They looked at the tooth shapes of various carnivorous creatures or biting creatures, from your T-Rex down to amphibians, like they're cecilids, they're kind of like little legless amphibians, through to things like, you know, woolly mammoths and walruses with their big kind of fangs and this kind of stuff, and looking to see the kind of the shape of these, of the teeth. And they found that generally, yes, the pointy teeth are cone-shaped, as you'd imagine, but they do have a rounded tip, and the rounded tip does seem to have a fairly consistent shape to it. And what people have often found, researchers found with this kind of work, is that the tip of these teeth is often a parabola type shape. So do you know what a parabola is?
I would say parabola.
Well,
no, I wouldn't.
Maybe you're right.
Yeah, parabola is the sort of like a normal distribution curve in many ways, right? It has a slope on either side and a...
Well, it doesn't have the slope on either side, but it has the bendy bit, yeah, right at the top.
It has the bendy bit, yeah.
Yeah, you would have seen parabolas. I mean, obviously anyone would see a parabola, like it's a shape that a projectile makes. Like you throw a ball, it goes a parabolic shape. If you spray a hose in the air, the water will make a parabolic shape, that kind of thing. But you would have seen them in maths at school if you did quadratic equations. And they're usually something with, you know, an equation with x squared, something to the power of 2, gives you a parabolic shape. So that's basically the kind of shape that you're getting here. It's a nice sort of smooth curve. And it is around, you know, the number is that the exponent in the equation isn't necessarily exactly 2. There can be slightly different, but it's around 2. So they're basically around this parabolic shape is what you're getting on the tips of these teeth. And this was just seen as kind of a bit of a curiosity, a uniform kind of pattern across different sizes of animals.
Are we talking about adult teeth that have been chomping and chewing away, or that have been used in defense, as if we're talking about the walrus, you know, some pointy things that have undergone wear and tear. And so that kind of wearing down of the point may have led to that parabolic shape. Or are we talking about brand new teeth that have never been used for their chewing purposes?
That is an excellent question, and one that I will get to.
Oh, okay.
Because that is actually a fairly important point in this whole story that we're about to embark on. But let's dig a bit more into exactly kind of how this shape works, though, before we get to that bit of it. Because, like I said, this is found across a lot of different species. And so different scientists have been studying it. There was a paper published in 2024 by some engineers who are trying to explore the mechanical kind of properties of this sort of shape. And they looked at, they focused on stingers rather than teeth, because stingers are nice, long, pointy things that are kind of straight, rather, whereas teeth kind of are often bendy and have more of a serrated edge to do other kind of biting things. So they looked at stingers.
You mean like a stinger as in like the tentacles of a jellyfish or a blue bottle, or no, smaller
like,
than that?
I mean like a bee stinger.
Oh, like a bee stinger. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. But they use this collective name for different kinds of things. So they have these long pointy things. There could be like a thorn. So they looked at cactuses as well. They looked at porcupine quills. There's a single-celled organism called a radiolarian, which has kind of like spiky bits of it of microscopic size. And they even looked at narwhals, you know, the whales with the big spike on the front. So anything that kind of a spiky, thorny, stingy sort of thing, they're collectively called stingers. And again, they examined these, they under microscopes, or obviously not with the narwhal, they looked at the shape, the tips of these things, and they mapped them out. And they again found this same kind of parabolic shape, this some equation to the power of two that is describing this shape. And so then they tried to look at what is the how does this fit in terms of the mechanics of it? And so they did some studies, they did some modeling, they also made some artificial stingers out of a material that is kind of similar to I suppose, similar mechanical properties to what you might get in nature. And they tried poking into a soft substance, as stingers often would do, to see what, to see how it
worked. What did you do in the lab today, babe? Oh, poked some squishy stuff with the stick that I made.
Well, see, what they realised fairly quickly is that, this is where I guess we can come back to our pencils, really, is that if you think about a pencil, when you sharpen it really sharp, what happens when you try and use it?
Well, it gets blunt, doesn't it?
But if you sharpen it too sharp...
Oh, it breaks.
It breaks, yeah. Pencils are slightly different. I mean, they're made out of graphite, obviously. But, you know, if you use like a wooden skewer that's particularly sharp and you try and poke it in something and it doesn't quite do it, it'll bend at the end and buckle. And it can be very frustrating if you're trying to poke something buckles. And so they did a bit of modelling and they found that, yeah, if you have something that is too sharp, too sort of cone-shaped, then it's going to buckle before it can penetrate the thing that it's going to break into. If it's too blunt, then it will have a lot of trouble penetrating this soft substance and will probably still buckle. You have to put a lot of force on it to make it get through. And that will also not be sufficient. And they found that there was kind of, in the equations, there was kind of a range where it was possible to have something that would be able to penetrate skin or something like that, but still, so be sharp enough to do that before it would buckle under the pressure being put in. And they found that this parabolic shape is kind of right in the sweet spot of this. In particular, it has kind of it's just outside the range where it would buckle. So it has the least amount of force required to poke it through the skin, if you want to look at it that way, without it buckling. And so it's kind of an ideal shape. So they hit on the idea that basically this is convergent evolution, that this is happening across nature because everything has evolved this kind of ideal mathematical equation for how it's going to work.
I feel like there's a but coming.
You feel like there's a but coming. And I think you picked on this earlier. So maybe the physicists aren't going to ruin everything for you, because you're thinking on the same line as the physicists in this situation. Because there has been some more work published recently by a bunch of physicists, actually a couple of Danish physicists, who saw this work and said, I don't know, what about, you know, is this, as I asked the question you asked, is this the fresh teeth or is this things that are being worn down over time, you know, because it does change over the lifetime. And also they pointed out that this particular shape, this parabolic shape, is also found in non-biological situations. So icicles and rock formations often have a similar kind of mathematical kind of equation to their point. So they're saying is maybe there's something else going on here. Maybe it's not evolution. Maybe it's something else to do with the way that these spiky things form. And so they did a bit of modeling themselves. They also did their own experiments. Can you imagine what they used?
Diamond lasers?
No, nothing so exciting, I'm afraid. We're going to have to go back to the pencils. They said they tried chalk, but it got too dusty. So instead they sharpened some pencils and jostled them around on a tray. They also apparently carried pencils in boxes in their pockets to see what would happen to a pointed tip of a pencil if it is kind of worn over time. And they found that pencils basically wear down to this same parabolic shape. And so it's perhaps not necessarily evolution, but it is actually just the way that things in the natural world just wear down into this particular shape. Yeah. That just happens to be a suitable shape for being a spiky thorn or stinger to penetrate the skin. You know, there's a few things missing out of there, I suppose. I mean, one is that, well, when the engineers did their tests, you know, the parabolic shape wasn't the only possibility. So, you know, perhaps they should have thought outside the box a little bit. But I guess, yeah, I think evolution is not entirely ruled out because, after all, they would allow, nature would allow for things to get worn down, quite possibly. You know, they don't necessarily, these various species don't replace their stingers when they get a bit blunt, they keep them. And it may be a suitable thing. You know, cats' claws often have to be worn down a bit to be effective. If they're too sharp, they could break. So it is something that nature does seem to perhaps be aware of, this particular property. And it is a necessary thing. But it's perhaps more done by the physics of it than by the evolution of it. So, look, I don't know if this is physicists for the win, but I found an interesting story of, you know, coming and using pencils to try and solve this.
Well, and it's certainly a different idea around trying to find a single explanation for something. To think that something like the shape of the top of a rose thorn and a bee stinger and a T-Rex bone, a T-Rex tooth, they might all have evolved that way.
Well, the idea seems
that's
sticking.
A very
yeah.
optimistic thing to think, in my opinion.
Well, I think it's because that's why the engineers got involved, thinking that they evolved that way because it is the ideal shape. Maybe this is, you know, evolution has produced the ideal shape as it just keeps producing it. But it turns out it's just
parabola can be an accident. A parabola can be explained in lots of different ways, different widths, different heights. The parabolic shape comes up everywhere, like you say. Is gravity involved? Was gravity involved in any of these equations?
I'm starting
to get annoyed now.
Okay.
It was? Okay, good. Oh, no, it wasn't involved.
No. Okay. But anyway, there you go. Look, it sounds like it's a puzzle that perhaps wasn't as big a puzzle as everyone thought it was, but you can rest easy knowing that they finally, I guess, got to the point of it at last.
Been sharpening that one for a while.
Yes.
I think we're lost.
We're not lost.
Not even any short-range radio signals yet?
Except for a single, very powerful radio emission.
Of course, a transmitter of that sort isn't exactly standard equipment.
The science and technology must be absolutely mind-boggling.
Of course, that's mostly on the theoretical side.
What so far?
Across Australia on the Community Radio Network, you're listening to Lost in Science.
Welcome back. You are listening to Lost in Science. And if you're a little bit squeamish, You heard at the top of the show that I'm talking about leeches, but I'm not really going to talk too much about the medical side of leeches, except for right now, because that is probably, when you think about leeches in science or leeches in research, that might be the first thing that jumps into your head. Oh, weren't leeches used back in the old days for medical treatments, right? And they have been used for a really long time to treat all sorts of things. The use of leeches goes back to ancient Egypt in 1500 BC, right. Actually. There was records of leeches on the walls of the pyramids.
So what's the idea? Is it that that the leeches suck out bad things from the blood? Is that the idea?
Yeah, so in the 18th and early 19th century, like this idea of bloodletting to get rid of bad stuff was really big business, right? And leeches were used in all sorts of medicine, from curing mental illness, curing cancer, all sorts of things. And then as medical science evolved, that sort of treatment was discredited, and so the use of the leech pretty much fell away. There's over 680 different types of leeches around the world, but there's only a few that are kind of known as medical leeches. And a lot of those species or subspecies or native populations went... What was that?
I said they had doctorates or...
Yeah, maybe. No, I don't think so. But they do have a scientific, like their medical name or their scientific name. I wrote it down. I didn't want to say it wrong. I've lost where it is. There it is. They might not have doctorates, but their scientific name is Hirudo medicinalis. Mm. So they are definitely, you know, they would definitely be considered medical, born and bred. But the species of leeches that were used for medicine really declined. Their populations really declined. They went locally extinct in lots of different places. And that was sort of leeches. Don't talk about leeches when you're doing medical stuff. From the 1960s, however, it kind of made a bit of a comeback, and they've been used fairly widely over the last 40 or so years, since the 1980s. There is a term, it's called hirudotherapy, which is leech therapy. There are fact sheets on many of the hospital web pages around Australia, actually, of how leeches are used. And the reason they are used is because when they latch on, their teeth break your skin and they produce saliva, and that saliva has got a coagulant in it. And so that can stop the blood from clotting when the leech is drinking the blood, because if the leech drinks blood and then that blood clots, that's not so great for the leech. So if you have got a part of your body where the blood is clotting and it shouldn't be clotting, you can apply a leech directly to the wound.
Okay.
Yeah, so the main use of leeches is in plastic surgery, where tissue is being reconnected, like a skin graft or replacing a finger or replacing parts of ears and those kinds of things, where it can be hard to get blood to flow there and there's often a clot. Your face is not...
I'm just thinking, you tell people it's not going to be too squeamish. So if you've lost your...
Okay, I'm nearly done. I guess it just... It's amazing, right? If you are based in Melbourne and you go to St. Vincent's Hospital, they've got a fish tank full of 40 medicinal leeches there.
Keep away
they
from
treat
that.
Up to 10 people. It's only, you know, it's quite rare, about 10 people a year take advantage of hirudotherapy. And in 2024, the London Zoo successfully bred 40 medicinal leeches from the remaining native population there. The population is very, very small, and they've successfully rebred them. So it is astounding to me that the leech can still be a part of modern medicine, you know, that they have this peptide, they release this coagulant that can still help our bodies, that medicine still doesn't quite know how to do, and that this is still an effective way to go about it, which I think is pretty cool. But it's not just their snazzy saliva that makes leeches special. You might know that most leeches have a sucker at both ends, right? And that's sort of how they can move. They like suck and then kind of concertina their bodies and then suck and then concertina. That's how they move along.
I did not know
and
that.
Well, now you do. They don't all have suckers at both ends, but some of them do. And this leech locomotion technique inspired a group of researchers in Shanghai to develop an amphibious, I'm going to read the title, and maybe you can help me understand the final word of the paper title because I was a little bit confused. They built an amphibious soft robot driven by high voltage triboelectricity, using a combination of suckering to the surface and then contracting the robot's body. So they built this robot sort of made of, you know, vertical pieces of material, and then they concertined it together and they had a sucker. And they used triboelectricity, which, as my understanding, is that it's kind of a type of static electricity. Yes, is that right?
Yeah, which I know that's your nemesis.
Is my nemesis. I know when you can't explain it. What do you mean you can't explain it? Well, you're certainly not going to explain it anymore by calling it triboelectricity. But these researchers, they were loud and proud in saying the leech inspired this robot that uses the voltage that's being transferred by the sucking and then the moving of the device. Kind of, I think that provided the electricity for it to continue to move. Yeah, I didn't totally understand the details of
maybe
how they're
charging one end and then that transfer that charge to the other end. And
yes, I think that might have been how it worked. But they were very complimentary of the leech and the leech's movement style. The leech locomotion was giving them lots of exciting ideas, which, I don't know, that also makes me think, okay, can't write the leech off just yet. Not only can they help us in the medical department, but they can also help us in the movement department.
It sounds like we might be able to replace them with robots, but anyway, let's carry on.
I'm getting a sense from you, Chris, that you don't love a leech.
I got personally nothing against them. I just don't want to be too near to them, shall we put that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You're happy for them to exist, but not around
that's
you.
That's right, you know.
You're a nimble, not in my backyard, leeches.
That's right.
Yes. Okay, well, what about this one?
Okay.
This is my favourite, and we're going back into the past now. I haven't, unfortunately, seen a modern version of this, but we heard a couple of weeks ago Claire was talking about how apes were able to use nighttime weather conditions to sort of predict daytime weather conditions when they were putting their nests mm-hmm. in different places. And there's all sorts of research and all sorts of studies that have been done in Western science, and also there's a lot of traditional knowledge, indigenous knowledge about plant and animal behaviour that can help you predict the weather. But in the 1850s, there was a doctor and an inventor called George Merriweather in the UK who invented something known as the leech barometer. If you don't like that name, because maybe you're a bit of a nimble, what about the tempest prognosticator?
Oh, that's good.
That's good. That's good, isn't it? So this was around at the time when there was more and more interest in how can we forecast the weather, right? So people were trying all sorts of different things. There's glasses that contain different types of crystals and different sort of fluids that would apparently kind of change their opaqueness and change their crystalline structure depending on changes in the temperature or changes in the pressure. And this was Merriweather's response, or, you know, entry into that scientific race, I suppose. So the tempest prognosticator, was 12 glass bottles, 12 little milk bottles, each one of them containing a leech, and they were set up in a circle. And the theory was that when the leeches were disturbed by changes in the air pressure, right? So if a tempest was coming, if a storm was coming, the leeches would climb upwards into these little bottles and trigger a little hammer, which was made of a whale bone. And then that would ring a little bell. And you could tell how likely it was for a storm to occur by how many bells were rung by the leeches fleeing to get away from the impending storm.
Are leeches known for their prognostication?
I didn't believe so, but I guess there's lots of animals that respond when a storm is coming, that, you know, lots and lots of animals are sensitive to pressure changes. And while there isn't a lot of modern evidence to support the fact that the prognosticator is accurate, in fact, his blueprints, Meriwether's blueprints, are gone. There is a replica that you can see in, he presented it at a fair in 1850. He was the honorary curator at the Whitby Literary and Philosophical Society in the UK at the time, and they have created a replica, and you can see that on display. I don't know if it's got real leeches in it or not anymore, but it's this huge, incredible device. And yeah, if you heard a bunch of leeches ringing bells, then that meant time to hunker down because the storm was coming. So he designed the glass bottles to be in a circle so the leeches wouldn't feel lonely. So they could see one another and not endure the affliction of solitary confinement. And he called his leech team his jury of philosophical counselors.
That is stunning.
It's stunning, you know. Yeah. So he was a yimby. Yes, in my backyard, leech. Tell me what's going on.
Okay.
So, I mean, I think the moral of the story is that leeches don't suck.
Sure, why not? I'll bite. Okay, that's yeah. That went in directions I did not expect.
Oh.
And that's it for another episode of Lost in Science. Lost in Science is recorded for 3CR in Melbourne on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and it airs across Australia on the Community Radio Network with the support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. We would love you to get in touch with us. You can email us at lostinsci@gmail.com, or you can find us on Facebook, we're Lost in Science on 3CR, or on Twitter, where we're at lostinscience1. You can find us on your favourite podcast app, where if you get the chance, please give us a good rating and review, as that will raise us up in the search rankings so other people can find the science. Or you can listen to us however you listen to us now, where at the same time every week, Claire, Stu and Chris get
Lost in Science!
Thanks for listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online.